On tonight's show, we're going around the belt, Thomas. We've got volleyball, basketball, football. We got so many sports going on. They're culminating. We're going to tell you all about it.
But don't worry. We're definitely going to talk about football as well. We're going to talk about Sun Belt players at the pro levels. And I've got one matchup that I want you to keep your eye on.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. And we got a final word. The NCAA, they finally made up their minds on a huge topic.
All right here, right now.
Roll it. On the show tonight, we've got...
Every night was a battle.
You can lock this in, take it to the bank.
No class at all. It's unbelievable.
They should see a relatively quick turnaround.
Show me the money.
Big water slides, snow cone truck and everything.
One team stands alone.
Well, you know what I think about Troy.
I'm losing my mind over here.
We've got the moment you've all been waiting for.
Of course.
Welcome in to another exciting episode of the Bench Boys Podcast. First of all, I'm Colin Cahill.
I'm Thomas Gleaton.
And we are the Bench Boys. This is our show. We're glad you're here. If you're here, while you're here, hit the subscribe button. We're on a lot of things called social media.
We're on Twitter,
the
tweeters,
the Twitters, the Facebooks, the MySpaces. We're on everything.
I'm actually going to start as a MySpace page now that you said it. So if you're listening to this and we don't have a MySpace page yet, check back.
We're going to have a real sweet song on that page, by the way. We're on everything. Just follow us. We're on...
It's going to be a lot like that song you just heard.
Probably.
It's going to be that song
it
you just heard.
It might be that song. That's probably all we can afford at this point.
But anyway...
You can hit us up on any type of social media, any type of platform that you are listening to right now. We're on just about everything, Spotify, all of it. Just all of it. There's just so many. We're on everything at this point.
Like, we're coming to you. We're coming to you. We're like the people on roller skates at Sonic.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to bring
we are curbside service
to you. We are curbside service. That's exactly what we are.
So, we're going to get going, and let's get out the gate.
Out of the gate.
Well, you know, it was another exciting week in Sun Belt action here. I think we're finally seeing some split, some depth, I guess, some difference between the contenders and pretenders. We're figuring out who's really a contender in this league. And one of those teams isn't Troy. Sorry. It's just it's just not there this year. Georgia State ran all over Troy. You got that pick right. I did not. Good for you. I think you're still undefeated right now. We still have one game left, which we will get to here in
a couple minutes. We will in a second. So Arkansas State over Texas State. We picked Arkansas State. That was a big win for them. App State over South Alabama, 30-3. You know, kudos to South Alabama's defense. I know I said this.
They hung in there.
They did. The defense is solid, and holding Appalachian State, even if they took their foot off the gas, holding Appalachian State to just 30 points is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, App's a team that averages 41 a game, so you held them to less than what they average. And unfortunately, their offense just wasn't there.
Look,
so.
I tweeted it this weekend. You know, people look at the win-loss record for South Alabama and say, this team hasn't gotten any better. But if you start dig into those stats, you dig into those point lines, 30-3 is a heck of a lot better than 52-7. So,
oh yeah, I mean ULM. There's a difference between ULM's defense and South Alabama's defense, which it's a good sign because I know a lot of guys that got out of South before this new regime has come in and taken over. A lot of the guys, especially a lot of defensive players, we've heard Jeremy Reeves talk about it, that there's a difference in this defense and it's not a good difference. And finally, there were some glimpses of that defense that people are kind of used to seeing in South that keeps them in ball games. They kept them in this ball game. They were a headache for App State for most of the day. I mean, App State didn't really look comfortable whenever they got inside the 30-yard line. And this is a team, too, that's what App State prides himself in, is they had these short drives and they turned them into points. South Alabama was forcing them to kick some field goals for most of the day. So, I mean, they did their job.
That's what I was about to say. I'm looking at the box score you got pulled up right now. Three touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Three touchdowns in this entire game and three field goals, three touchdowns this entire game for a team that averages 41 points.
Yeah.
I mean,
the thing you really want to look at right there is they're 6 of 17. App State was 6 of 17 on third down. That's a great stat. That keeps you in the ball game. Problem is, South Alabama on the other side went 1 of 15 on third down. So they weren't driving at all. I mean, so you had an anemic offense with an average defense, that performed above average against App State. So it was the defense kept them in, but I mean, App's just that good of a team. And that's the thing. That's where good teams are. When you're at scoring points, your defense has got to step up, and App has that. And that's why I think we're talking about contenders. App right now, I think, is just a tier above everybody else. The second team on that list, I think, Georgia State. I'm going to put Georgia State up. I think Georgia State, Louisiana right now are 2A, 2B. I really think, just because they're both physical. We saw that this weekend against Troy. And I've been harping on them the entire year long that I think Troy's defense has been behind a curtain. And the curtain was pulled this weekend because they were all about, okay, well, we only had a bad passing defense. We can stop the run. Sorry, you guys can't do that either. You gave up 392 yards rushing. Which for a team that averages they were averaging 238 coming into the ballgame, you gave up 392.
I will give you props. You did say that this stretch that Troy is about
to
enter,
it's going to be the toughest one.
It's the toughest one, yeah. But for that run defense, the toughest test. And Trey Barnett,
I think he broke the single season record. I think he broke the career record. I think he broke everything against Troy.
He's not even the run offense that Coastal or Louisiana has.
No.
So
no, but Georgia State is starting. And I said this a couple weeks ago. I think physicality wise, they're right there in the same league as App State and Louisiana. And I think App's tier one, then you have a tier two of just literally Louisiana and Georgia State, and then everybody else is, there's a little bit more parity down after that. You might throw Georgia Southern starting to click. They played a really bad New Mexico State team and won this week. We both picked that, I'm pretty sure. New Mexico State's really bad. But I think the contenders, I think there's finally starting to show some difference between the teams in this league.
I'll say I'm not exactly sold on Georgia Southern as even a bowl contender yet.
Yeah.
But it's going to come down to, and I said it this week, it's going to come down to our game of the week in 2 weeks, next week, Georgia Southern at Troy.
Yeah.
Whoever comes out of that game will probably make the last bowl slot that we have, just because Arkansas State's in the West and it's Louisiana and Arkansas State in the West than everybody else.
Yeah.
Arkansas State's pretty much a clone of Troy. I've said that, with a better wideout.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've got the offense. They've actually got a better defense than Troy does. And obviously we saw that because Arkansas State ended up winning that game.
They're very close.
I mean, the point is, you're right. There's parity in that next tier of the Sun Belt teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty clear who is where.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit more parity, I will say, at the bottom. I mean, between Coastal Carolina, Georgia Southern, Troy, those three teams right there.
Arkansas State.
Well, I would even put Arkansas State right. I don't know. They're kind of.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. If they are clone to Troy, then by logic, they're better than Troy because they won and they've beaten ULM. They've beaten these other teams.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, they haven't beaten ULM. We'll get to that in a minute.
We'll get to that game.
But the point is, I'm
jumping ahead.
I am jumping way ahead. But the point is, Arkansas State, ULM, Georgia Southern, Troy, they're all pretty much right there.
Yeah.
And you can't. It's hard to parse because they're better in different ways than these other teams. And until you see them play each other, you're not going to be able to tell who's better.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about Mr. Trey Barnett. I think that should get us right into our
fine with me.
Our Been On Sports Hustle Award of the week. Trey Barnett, pretty much, for me, it was an easy pick. The guy, I mean, 242 yards. He shattered the Georgia State single game mark, which was only 201. He broke the record with a 41-yard touchdown. He had a school record fourth straight game of 100 yards. He had a school record he helped for a school record rushing as a team of 390 yards. He broke the school single season and career records this year for rushing. I mean, the kid's had a stellar year, which is great. But 242 yards against Troy. Yeah, it's Troy. They're deep, you know. We've talked about their problems of their defense, but just what
statistically on paper,
yeah,
that is incredible for him to do.
Yes, on paper,
such a defense.
Yeah, when you looked at Troy's stats on paper, you're and a lot of people talked about that he did against the Troy defense. Yeah, it was great on paper, but for people who have done the eye test on Troy, I'm sorry. I'd hate to gloat my horn or blow my horn or whatever it is, but I'm sorry, but I kind of saw this coming. I mean, yeah, I picked Troy. I thought their offense would do a little bit better than what they did. The offense did do what they did do fine in the game. I mean, but they didn't put up, they didn't score points at all. So, but back to Barnett, he's had him in a hell of a season. And, so I think this is our first, been on sports award for him this season. I don't think we've had him yet. So
I split it up between the two. Oh yeah. You other had two. Okay, Southern yeah. backs, so, or state.
So,
backs,
I mean, so he's no stranger, I guess, to this award, but, he definitely is a deserving for the whole season. So 242 yards, nothing to, I mean, that was one of the best performances of the week. So
we may as well stick to this, weekly award winners page right here. Because I'm going to go with Wesley Kennedy from Georgia Southern. So like we said, Southern had a monster game against New Mexico State that basically the Sun Belt rejects, the guys that got kicked out. But it's not just him, what he did for the offense. It's what he did on special teams. He ran a 71-yard rushing touchdown, awesome, and a 67-yard punt return for touchdown. Punt return touchdowns are a pretty big factor in my book. If you pull one of those off, you're a high contender for a Hustle Award in my book.
Yeah.
It's just... It was.
We love special teams here.
Oh, I do. I absolutely love special teams, but just the Georgia Southern. You said it best. Georgia Southern's offense is starting to show up.
Yeah,
I'm not sold on them yet.
Yeah,
but
they had what 400 yards? 400 yards rushing.
Something like that. Yeah. Said.
I think it was about 400 yards rushing a game, which that's what you want to see that offense do. Not these 250 games because they just run the ball so much. You want to see that 450 yard game. And I think they were fairly close. I know it's New Mexico State, but you want to see them perform that well in that type of a game.
Yeah, the Eagles put 403 yards on the ground.
Okay.
Wesley Kennedy himself tallied a career high 143 yards rushing, two touchdowns, and one 9-yard catch. Just a little cherry on the top.
Hey, you're gonna catch in that offense. I mean, there you go.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure it was the only catch they made all day. So no problem. The Eagles had not had a punt return for touchdown in 8 years. So
there you go.
For you to be a punt return touchdown guy, it's Georgia Southern.
You're going to be remembered.
So
it doesn't happen a lot.
Congratulations to Wesley Kennedy and Trey Barnett for our Hustle Award winners of the week. Let's go ahead and get into something real quick. We'll touch on it because it needs to be touched on. We literally, right as we started recording, this information came out. The third guy on this list,
yes,
for the defensive player of the week, Nathan Page for Arkansas State. A little bit of breaking news. He's been suspended for the team. We got that information from our friend Chase Gage.
Yep.
And out of Jonesboro. Our other friend of the show, Kara Ritchie, has tweeted that I searched for him in what county was it?
I'm not sure what county.
Whatever it was, but the county jail log has him listed as being charged with domestic violence. So,
domestic battery, I think.
Battery, you're right. Yeah. From a football standpoint,
it's a big loss.
It is a big loss,
especially for Arkansas State. Their defense is not that good.
But given the circumstances that appear to be. I don't think anyone in Jonesboro is completely upset with that decision.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you're under investigation for anything, especially when it comes to domestic violence, domestic battery, anything like that, you have to let the investigation take its course.
Yeah.
You can't let this guy play. You can't.
And
they probably have rules like that. I know in the Sun Belt they have rules like that, that if there's a player that's under investigation... I mean, yeah, we saw that instance with Shai Wirtz earlier, and the charges were dropped. Then he got reinstated to the team, all that type of stuff. So
the 24/7 site for Arkansas State said domestic abuse. Kara Ritchie looked in the jail log, and it says domestic battery. Mm-hmm. The point of the matter is this guy is off the team, and for good reason. Anyway, moving on.
I think we're going to talk about that in our game of the week here because. That's going to be a big factor, I think, because their pass defense is already the worst in the conference. And if you're losing a corner like that, a defensive back like him, you know, it can't do your defense any well at all.
But we'll get to that in a minute. Let's get to the game that you're probably preparing to watch right now.
Oh yeah,
as the kiddos trick or treat outside,
dude.
The craziness, the chaos, the spookiness that is the Georgia Southern Appalachian State rivalry will be on your television.
I love this game.
So pumped for this game.
We all kind of expected Georgia Southern to come out the gate a little bit better, and they haven't. But it last year they weren't a great. I think they were like 3-3 maybe when they met up last year, and this was kind of the game that sparked them, and they just went on a tear
late
in the season. They upset App State last year when they were ranked. So now I know all the App State fans. I mean, this game doesn't. We don't have to do this game justice of saying this is an important game. The App State fans, the Georgia Southern fans, they know that this is an important game just because of the rivalry, but they know all what's at stake. App State fans especially now, I mean, I know we put up that poll last week, and we had so many people tweeting us and saying, we're focused on South Alabama right now, man. Like I don't know why you guys are talking about this game. But it was just
It's because we're recording right now.
Yeah.
We're releasing it when we released it.
Yeah.
And you're listening to it right now, and the game is coming on the Thursday after we've recorded.
Yeah.
Point is,
I mean, they know because App State is where they're at. They're 7-0. They realize where they're at in the season, and unfortunately, and I know I'm kind of going off tangent here, but App State, they've got to blow this team out. They have to because the App State fans, I know a lot of them are thinking something bigger than just a bowl game right now. They got a top 20 ranking.
Yeah.
They're second in the.
Say what you will about one game at a time.
No, people are looking ahead to that. And I'm sorry, but if you want, you can't win this game close. I know it's a big game, it's a rivalry game, but you've got to show, you're on national television. You have got to show a lot of those voters in that room, in that CFP room, we are the real deal, because right now their strength of schedule is 131. There's literally FCS teams that have a tougher schedule than that right now.
By math alone, that has to be accurate.
Yeah. So it's just that they've got to literally blow teams out in when they come into Sunbelt. If they want to, if you're App State and you want aspirations of going to a CFP game, not the playoff, but probably a New Year's Day Six Bowl.
Right. So compare that to.
You've got
to
do that.
They beat South Alabama 30-3.
Yeah.
They're going to look at that and say, oh, it was 30-3. But when they look deeper, they see
how well the defense played. Yeah.
So that's there.
But you're on national television tomorrow night. You're playing a rivalry game. You're at home.
It can't be 17-7.
No, you have got. They have got to run the table basically all night long. But getting back to the game itself, oh my lord, both of these teams' video departments. Holy crap, they need like a medal because it's Halloween. You were talking about spooky. They played the part of that. Like, both of them had the spookiest, I think, uniform reveal trailers of all time at this point. One went with It, right? And the other one went with Stranger Things, right? Like, Georgie.
It was It, Children of the Corn, Chernobyl kind of thing going on.
And then Stranger Things.
Then, Stranger Things.
Like, I mean, we've got all whites. We've got the all blacks. Like, it's just like, I mean, it's Stormtrooper versus Darth Vader. I don't know.
All right. My turn to go off on a tangent.
Go for it.
Blackout versus whiteout is the best uniform combination matchup that can ever exist. For one team to go in all black, the other team to go in all white, it looks great. It looks great on television. You can put it in black and white, and it'll look great on television just because it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful thing to me. I'm going to stop ranting because I'm literally not saying anything.
No, I mean, it's just... It goes back to the change in culture of college football today. Like, when did you ever see uniform reveal videos like 10 years ago? You didn't. Like, they put up a piece of paper and they said, this is the color of our shirt, this is the color of our pants, and that's the color of our helmets. And that's all you saw. Now, it's like, I mean, it's an incredible thing.
For our alma mater with Troy.
Yeah.
During the Larry Blakeney years from 2005 when Troy became Troy University to 2014, his last year, it was basically, okay, they're away, so it's a white jersey. What color pants are they wearing?
Yeah.
They're at home, so they could be doing, they're not doing the gray because it's not a military week.
They didn't have gray back then.
14 was the year they started the gray. but
his last year.
Right. But the point is, they're at home. Yeah. What color pants are they wearing? Yeah. And that was it. Yeah. The helmets were the same. Yeah. It just,
well, it's all something. It's all a recruiting tool.
Oh, it absolutely
is. It's all about recruiting. It's to show we are the coolest. We are hip. We are in the trends. Like, you go Stranger Things, like, you go It, because, you know, It just came out. But, like, I just think it was cool. There's probably a lot of thought that went into it. I mean, the shots were great. They went to, like, an abandoned warehouse. Like, that was awesome. Like, they ran with what was kind of written on the walls. They kind of used that. I mean, great photography. This is the photographer coming out in me right now. But it was great stuff to see.
It was well edited.
Oh, well, the edits were great. I love the balloon. I mean, I posted it earlier, so if you guys follow me on Twitter, go look at the videos. But no, just another aspect into that rivalry, into this game, that just makes it, I mean, it's such a fun rivalry. These guys don't like each other at all, man. Like, they just don't. And so it just adds to that. So, but just a great, it's going to be a fun game. And I know we talked about it last week, but it's just such a big game for the Sun Belt.
High stakes, big emotion the whole week, and both teams are just know what's got to be done in order for them to make a change. This game will mean a lot for both sides for the year.
Oh yeah.
Going back, you were talking about it was a recruiting tool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another recruiting tool that a lot of teams like to use is
NFL.
The NFL. There you go.
There you go.
You picking up what I'm putting down?
I am, buddy.
So this past week, I tweeted. Actually, on Tuesday, I tweeted about from the Bench Boys account about how the Falcons picked up Georgia Southern kicker Young Ho Koo. That is one of many NFL changes and NFL additions or cuts with Sun Belt players this past week. Tay Hayes was picked up by the Jags. Elijah McGuire was dropped by the Browns off the practice squad. Penny Hart from Georgia State was added to the practice squad in Seattle. Got me thinking, how many players have we got in the NFL? We got 32. One for every team. But just about every college in the Sun Belt is represented, except for Louisiana Monroe, the only college without a team or a player in the NFL. But the point of the tweet was, Young Ho Koo is a Georgia Southern kicker. No doubt he'll be... If he's not practicing, he'll be watching the game tomorrow Thursday night. He is going to go up against Georgia State kicker Will Lutz, who is a New Orleans Saint in the rivalry game. The kickers on either side of this major divisional rivalry game both come from the Georgia schools in the Sun Belt. I know that Southern and State is more of a little brother, big brother kind of like fighting thing. Like, it's not a rivalry like the App State thing is.
Yeah.
But these two guys kicked against each other in that game in college.
Yeah.
It didn't really look too good for Koo because he didn't really get that many opportunities.
Okay.
But I mean, it's also Georgia State up against Georgia Southern.
Yeah.
So we'll see two times this year.
Koo went to Georgia Southern, right?
Koo went to Southern. Lutz
is Georgia State guy. Okay.
Yep. So they've only ever met on the field three times, twice in college, once is in preseason game when Koo was playing for the Chargers. So far, Lutz owns the series 2-1, and he'll have two opportunities to, excuse me, Koo will have two opportunities to get another win in that series and possibly take the lead if he's good and if the Falcons somehow pull it out. That's not going to happen.
You don't sound too...
That's not going to happen.
You don't sound too positive about that.
As an Atlanta
buddy.
Fan, that's not going to happen. But, no, it was just interesting to see what all players went where and how some of these players have overlapped. So, for like example, App State's Donald Blair plays on the 49ers with Southern's Matt Breida and Southern's Jerick McKinnon. As of tonight, those are both accurate via ESPN. But just for that rivalry to exist there is something interesting to look at. Unfortunately, we don't have one for South and Troy. Louisiana can't have one because ULM doesn't have any players.
For South?
South has three players currently listed as in the NFL. Gerald Everett on the Rams.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about South doesn't have somebody in the NFL.
No.
Just somebody. No,
we don't have a rivalry between the
Okay,
two
I got
them.
You, I got you. I was like, wait, Gerald Everett? Like, that's who, that was the first guy that came to mind. I got you.
No. But Gerald Everett's on the Rams, Jeremy Reeves on the Redskins, friend of the show, and Jamarius Way is on the Broncos. Troy has a surprising lack of offensive players. Mario Addison on the Panthers, defensive line. Mm-hmm. Steve McClendon on the Jets, defensive line. Mm-hmm. Trayvon Sanders on the Jets. Pretty sure it's a defensive lineman.
Yeah.
Brendan Trawick on the Ravens. I think he's a linebacker.
Yep. Safety.
Safety. Okay, yep. My bad.
Yeah.
But all four defensive players.
Well, yeah. I mean, you and me have highlighted the lack of draft picks in NFL players from Troy over the last 3 years in the Neil Brown era. So, I mean, it is surprising. I mean, we do have an XFL player.
Oh, for sure.
We do have that. So, I don't know if we're counting that yet. But, hey, there's plenty of...
Counts to me.
There's going to be plenty of Sunbelt talent in the XFL, I can tell you that. I mean, there's plenty. So,
For right now, we're sticking to the NFL.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the XFL later, but as of right now, obviously App State leads with the most players. They have 7. Texas State and Louisiana both have 2. But yeah, it's a
good showing. 32 guys total. Yep.
And I'm gonna put that list up some point this weekend for y'all to check it out.
It's a good showing.
Just to keep up with players for these teams.
Well, we will transition from around the NFL to around the belt.
Well done.
Around the belt.
That's right. It's a new segment we like to call Around the Belt. We're basically gonna touch around the belt on some sports that are actually happening right now that are not called football.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, one of them's football.
Well,
but
do you call it that?
No, it's soccer.
Do you go around calling it Sunbelt football?
Do you want to catch some football today?
No.
No, because then you get a penalty and the other team gets to kick. That's how this works. Anyway, we're going to start it off with that. That's a pretty easy segue.
There you go.
Soccer is in full swing right now.
Yeah, women's soccer. The Sunbelt does... Well, no, the Sunbelt does have men's soccer.
Yes.
But not all of the traditional schools compete in that. So
it's Title IX, little hand wavy stuff.
Yeah.
Most teams in the Sunbelt, obviously, 10 out of 12, have football teams instead of men's soccer teams.
Yes.
That's just how that things are.
Yeah.
However, just about every single team in the conference
has a women's
team.
Yeah.
Women's I'm pretty sure that's all 12 teams.
Yeah. Yeah. So 8 teams make it. We had 12, I think. We might have had 10. No, it's definitely 12. Okay, so yeah, 12 teams, 8 teams make it out of the 12. This year, Troy and South Alabama are the top 2 seeds coming into the tournament this year. And
it's,
we were talking about contenders, pretenders for football, you know, kind of separation. Those two teams separated themselves from the pack. Both got double-digit wins on the season. Nobody else had that.
And you were saying, I'm looking at the numbers right here, the standings. Mm-hmm. It was really, really close.
It literally came down to the last game. Troy went to overtime with Ark State, and they needed not to go to overtime at all. That was the breaker right there. I think they would have tied if Troy wouldn't have done that, and they would have had to split the thing. And then Troy would have gotten the number 1 seed
because of head-to-head.
Head-to-head, Troy beat South Alabama. So, but no, South had a total of 25 points. You get 3 points for a win. They had 8 wins, and overtime, they get 1 point per overtime. Troy, 23 points, finished 2 points behind. But both of those teams, though, definitely right now just – I'm not trying to say leaps and bounds, but they're just on a tier 1. Everybody else is down in tier 2. The next and so they will go 1-2. South Alabama opens up with the 8 seed Georgia Southern, who is 6-10-1 on the season. I'm pretty sure they beat them earlier in the year. The Jaguars enter the tournament riding a 5-match winning streak, and they led the having led the league during the regular season with 42 goals scored. So they score some points, and that was the shocking thing when they played Troy. Troy shut them out. So I can't, if both of those two teams make it to the championship, that's going to be one heck of a game, because obviously just rivalry and then how well those two teams play against each other. Troy enters the tournament as the number 2 seed. They've won or tied its last 8 matches, so basically the same deal. Troy faces the 7th seeded Louisiana Raging Cajuns, who have a winning record but are literally at .500 in conference play. The teams face each other earlier in the year. Trojans won 2-1. And they literally scored their last two. They scored their only 2 goals of the game within like the last like 10 minutes of the game. So, and I think they even got a golden goal in that game. Then you kind of drop down. You've got Arkansas State 5-2-3 in conference, 9-5-3 total on the year. They're third, and then you have three teams that are sitting at 5-4-1 from 6-7-8 basically, or excuse me, from 4-6 and 4-5-6. Sorry, I can't count at all because I'm reading this weird. So Coastal Carolina, they'll take on Georgia State. But all this in our backyard, fully Alabama, Sportsplex.
Right down the road.
So we might try to get out there. Maybe I might try to get out there, catch a match or two next week when all this is going on. Troy South for sure. There might maybe be an upset early, but I don't see Troy South falling because their offenses have been really dominant the entire year, and South just playing how well South's been playing to close out the season. I think South I'd pick early picks right now to have Troy and South prevailing to get into the championship. I think it's a toss up once you get those two teams in there. And, you know, last season it was Little Rock and Texas State. Texas State came in as the favorite and they literally went 0-0 tie in the championship, and it went to penalty kicks, which is like I remember myself saying this. It's one of the most exciting things I think in sports. Anything when you have to do like penalty shots in hockey or penalty kicks in soccer, it's just exciting to watch. And that game ended up like 6-5. So if this year can copy that, that would be great. That'd be one heck of a tournament.
It honestly is reminiscent the same reason those are some of the best overtimes in sports is the same reason that the college football overtime will always beat the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an aside that we'll get to later eventually down the line. But I would like to point out Georgia State is currently running on a 4-game win streak.
Okay.
They're right now number 4 in the conference, but keep an eye on
them. Maybe a little dark horse action
That's
there.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
There aren't a lot of – I don't remember there being a lot of upsets these past couple years because South won the 4 of the last 5.
Yeah, 4 in a row.
Up until last year, South Alabama had won all 4 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, the number 1 and number 2 seeds ended up in the championship.
Right. Yeah.
So – it doesn't seem like there are any surprises.
You might get 5-6 game. You might get the six team.
Right. But keep an eye on Georgia State because team is going to flip that 5-6 pick, that's definitely what's going to happen.
Yeah. One. And just rolling straight out of that, we're going to go right into volleyball because volleyball, their season is coming to an end as well. We've got a lot of action in volleyball. I know we've talked about Texas State and just their dominance. Their coach was one of my Hustle Award winners, 800 something wins.
Incredible.
Incredible feat. We're going to talk about, I have another 800 win coach in this league, or seeking his 800 win. We'll talk about that here in a couple minutes. But first, Sun Belt action. Texas State leads the West 18-7, 10-1. They've lost one match the entire season. They're one of the hottest teams in the country. They're riding an 8-match win streak. Won its first 5 matches of this current streak with 3-0 scores. So they're doing that thing where they just shut you out, basically. They don't let you win a set. But right now, the hottest team, I think, in the Sun Belt goes to South Alabama. I know we're talking a lot of South here in the women's sports. But South Alabama, perfect 14-0 at home. You get them on their home court. Let me tell you something. That is a home court advantage right there.
14-0.
Yeah.
They beat App State last week.
They beat App State last week.
They had
week.
To be if they're under. They went undefeated
at
home.
They had a great game against Troy. I'm about to get into that. Their first thing though, 18 wins, most since 1989. Pretty good. Pretty good. They're having a great year. Jags broke school single season record for wins at home with their 12th win at home over Georgia Southern back on October 25th. They've since added 2 more since then. Last night, they played one heck of a game against Troy. They swept Troy. Troy came into the match. They were one of the hottest teams in the East. The East has Coastal Carolina, who, before the season started, was the pick. They were picked. Troy was picked to finish 6th at the beginning of the year. Troy came in at 2nd, and then you had South Alabama at 3rd. Huge win for South Alabama, and Coastal dropped a match. So South leapfrogged both Coastal and Troy, and now South is the number 1 team right now in the East Division for volleyball. So,
and that's based on conference wins because right now those top 3 teams all have 18 wins.
Yep.
So
it's the East is just is wide open with those.
Talk about parity.
That's parity right there. The West, a little bit more figured out, obviously, because, I mean, Texas State's just kind of ran away with the West. But still, you have the tournament. All four of those teams are going to get in. I'm looking at some win streaks here right now. Louisiana might be, you know, you're talking about Georgia State. I think they've got a week left, maybe 2 weeks left of regular season action. I think it's 2 weeks. But Louisiana, they could be that team that kind of catches kind of fire there late in the year that could surprise maybe somebody late in the season in the tournament. So
they're 9-14, so they're going to have to pull something out. They're going to have to get to those double digits in order to be a competitor in the tournament this year.
Yes, and just wrapping everything up, Texas State, they host the tournament, so everybody's going to have to fly out to San Marcos. So I think that's going to be a big advantage for Texas State that they get to play there, and then just – I mean, every team with the exception of maybe like Arkansas State, everyone's going to have to fly.
Imagine if it was on in Mobile.
Oh, yeah.
Because like that would be heck of a selling point. They'd be like, we haven't lost here.
Yeah.
What a little bit of swag.
Licking their chops.
Come on. Like, let's do it.
So that's scheduled for November.
They shouldn't have an issue selling tickets next year.
No, they shouldn't. Not there. November 21st through the 24th. So they've got about 3 weeks left of the regular season. So that's going to be big. The cool thing with this is the we were talking about those three teams earlier. All of those teams rank inside the top 100 when it comes to volleyball programs this year, with obviously Texas State at 38th. Texas State, they've kind of dropped. They were a top 25 preseason team. They played a real tough non-con schedule, though. But they're still 38th, Coastal Carolina 64, and Troy coming in at 91. So all three of those teams, they're good programs. If you're in the top 100, you're a good program. If you're in the top 40, you're a really good volleyball program. So hats off to Texas State. We know how good that program is. So we got about 3 weeks before that. But that's women's volleyball. That's wrapping up. We got soccer wrapping up, and we got something starting up, and that's basketball.
And I'm super excited. Like, just as a Troy fan with a new coach, that's where I'm at.
How excited are you, Thomas?
Well. I'm more excited about a new basketball season right now than...
And what we've seen for football?
Yeah. But let's move on and talk about the entire Sun Belt because...
Oh, yeah, there you go.
They had their media days today, didn't they?
Yeah, a lot of teams had their basketball media days, which are really fun. I follow a lot of the schools on social media. It's fun to see the players because you kind of see the difference in personalities of teams. Some teams, and we've talked about this before, but some teams are that business-like... You know, oh, we're focused on the season, and some guys are just laid back. They're fooling around. You got the guys that are interviewing the other players. Like, you love seeing that, like seeing some personality out
Terry
of the players.
Terry Fowler, friend of the show.
Oh yeah, he's absolutely great guy. Great. I mean, he's exactly that type of guy that he's gonna have fun with his team. His team's gonna have fun. So yeah, but no, women's basketball was kind of the highlight today. A lot of things came out. We had the coaches poll that came out earlier today. We had preseason picks. Preseason all Sun Belt first team. We're just going to roll through this really quick. Women's basketball, the coaches preseason poll, Little Rock gets 6 first place votes, 127 points. They are your number one preseason pick to win the league. Troy coming in with 4 first place votes. Troy's a loaded team. UTA was a really good team last year. They get one vote. I know the coaches, I don't want to say UTA coach probably voted for themselves, but hey, maybe, I mean, I don't know. You just,
well, South Alabama has one vote there too.
Yeah, South Alabama has one vote, and we're gonna get right into that.
But South Alabama had one vote in football.
Yeah, they did.
The preseason poll.
I mean, the coaches. Look, if it was me, I'd vote for my own team every time.
Right. No, so. You gotta have that chip on your shoulder.
Yeah.
You gotta show your teams, guys. Let's go earn this. No, looking at those top 4 teams, that sounds about right, because what were the 4 teams we were really talking about last year when it came to basketball?
Those 4.
Those 4.
I mean, South, I think, went the...
Started off 13-14-0.
Yeah.
Troy absolutely ran
South,
the table with
South went
rebounds.
Deep. It was the NIT that they went deep
yes.
on, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So South went deep on the NIT. We had Coach Fowler. Hopefully we get him on again this year.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the guy's great interview. But getting on to the first team, South Alabama... 2 picks on the All Sunbelt first team: Antoinette Lewis and Savannah Jones, both junior. Well, Savannah's a guard, Antoinette's a forward. Antoinette, a beast down low. I mean, she just controls the low. And she also is, surprise, surprise, your Sunbelt Player of the Year preseason pick. So South Alabama, you watch out in Mobile. They've got a squad down there when it comes to women's basketball, and even in men's basketball.
I was about to say, Richie Riley has
Richie Riley's got a squad down there. We will talk about them. But for right now, we're focused on women's basketball. Also on preseason Sun Belt first team, Coastal Carolina senior DJ Williams and Georgia State junior Jada Lewis from Georgia State, and then Kyra Collier from Little Rock, Arkansas. And Little Rock is the really interesting team because of just how, I mean, Little Rock for I think 4 or 5 years before Shanda Rigby got here, they just kind of ran the league. Like, I mean, they were winning 28 games a year. I mean, and that is the other reason why. I mean, I would, to be honest with you, just with their pedigree, I'd pick Little Rock just because of their coaching as a dark horse to win this league.
A dark horse? You're saying the preseason number one is going to be a dark horse?
I don't know.
If you're saying that they're the ones that are going to win the league, I don't call them a dark horse.
Yeah, I guess I agree with you
because they're number one. They've been picked number one.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you for the same reasons, too, just because they're going to be that pedigree. They've won it before. They got the same coaching staff. It's pretty difficult to go back to back. But I mean, if any program can do it out of the Sun Belt, I'd say it's Little Rock.
Yeah. I'm trying to find a stat. There it is.
Obviously,
right here.
It's going to be Little Rock because no other team won it last year. Thomas, good job with that Yogi Berra-ism. Come on.
Okay, so I was trying to find some stats here, but we talked about 800 wins earlier in the year with Texas right. State Volleyball. We got another coach that's looking for 800 wins. Joe Foley, he needs just 11 more victories until he gets his 800 win, and he is the Little Rock women's head basketball coach.
That makes sense.
There you go. So he's entering his 33rd season overall. He ranks sixth among active coaches in the entire country in career wins, so good for him. But he's a reason. I mean, they're just a solid team. Like they've, and I guess I sounded stupid a little while ago calling them a dark horse. No, they aren't the dark horse. They're a good team. So,
We both sounded stupid in this segment. Let's end it on the note that if you've done anything 800 times professionally, I'd say you're pretty good at what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that pretty much brings us back around to the other side of the belt. Wraps it up. We'll talk more about basketball, obviously, when football season starts to wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited because I want to see this Troy squad, what they're going to do as a young team. The South Alabama squad that's supposed to be a dominant
force. Oh, you're talking about men's basketball now.
I am. But also women's basketball, it's always, always exciting.
Oh, dude.
To keep track of.
I mean, South Alabama, Terry Fowler, obviously his team, the way they finished last year, they've got a lot of momentum coming in this year. I think we talked a lot about Troy last year. We thought they were going to win about 28 games. I think they won 23, which was still like a school record. But Troy, they just reloaded again. And Shanda Rigby, they're one of the most just up and down the court teams. I mean, they're like, I think they've been in the top 10 the last 4 years in scoring. They're a dangerous team to play in scoring. They will just run you to death. So there's going to be a lot of exciting games and a lot of good teams, I think, this year again in the Sun Belt.
So let's bring it back around to football. Hey, that's another thing. That's the thing that's going on.
Football.
Let's get into our segment, Know Your Enemy.
Know Your Enemy.
That's right. It's your Know Your Enemy game of the week between Arkansas State and ULM. It's a West Division battle. I think there's a lot on the line. You you were talking about Coastal Carolina, Georgia Southern, Troy, earlier of who gets to bowl games. I think this is a big game for who gets to a bowl game right now. Both teams sitting at, Arkansas State sitting at 4-4, ULM sitting at 3-4, 2-1 in the conference. If ULM can get this win, I mean, they're 3-1. They're outside looking in to Louisiana, depending on what Louisiana does in the West Division as well. So, I mean, it's a big game for both teams.
And I think it's worth mentioning, too, I called it the 60-year war because these two teams have played off and on for the better part of 60 years.
Wow.
Like they first played back in 1959. They've been off and on since. I think in the 70s they had a break, and in the mid 90s they had a break when there was all that turmoil with the teams actually moving up and moving around. But the point of this is these two teams are well acquainted with each other. They've played each other for a long time, and that's not going to change anytime soon. There's stakes here. I think you're right. I think whichever one of these teams wins is more likely to go to a bowl game. Mm-hmm. But there's also the emotion. It's not a App State Georgia Southern by any means, but it could be on the line of Georgia Southern Georgia State because these two teams are so close. They're in the same conference. They're so close. They're just
at the same division.
They're in the same division. They're in the same point of the season where they need a make or break game in order to really push them toward one way in this season. Because both teams right now, honestly, are just kind of middling. Like, yes, Omar Bayless is fantastic. Mm-hmm. He's a bright spot. But it seems like there's ups and downs with Arkansas State that they just cannot find an identity that is consistent.
Well, yeah, I mean, you talk about up and down. I mean, you look at UL Monroe's last five games. It's loss, win, loss, win, loss. I mean, that's just up and down. And there are some crazy scores. I mean, 72-20, 30-17, 52-33, 24-14, 52-7.
It's back and forth.
It's just like
it's like a pinball.
What is going on with UL Monroe right now? And it's just that inconsistency. I mean, they get a bye week, which was good for them, but they're coming off a blowout loss to App. I mean, they didn't look competitive at all in that game. The first drive, that was it. Josh Johnson did great. Rest of the game.
Now, yeah. I will say, that's the kind of game that App State needs to have to keep its ranking and to keep its hopes at a New Year's Six game alive.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of wins it needs to have. But if you're ULM, you're thinking, we got to do better than that.
Oh, yeah.
We got to do better than that against somebody.
Yeah.
We got to find a way to win against somebody.
I mean, you're 3-4. Your season isn't done yet. Like, you
no.
get three wins.
Right.
That's all you need. Just find three wins. But this is one of those big games that they need to win. Like, they've got to win this game.
They have to have a defining moment in order to win this game. And this could be that for either team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at Ark State on the other hand. You know, they had the two-game losing streak against Georgia State and Louisiana, who we've both talked about, physical teams, and they just got out-physicaled, I think. And Arkansas State isn't the type of team that's going to be that physical. They're going to be a finesse type of team. And then they go play a Texas State team that was our game of the week last week, 38-14. That was a good win, 24-point game. That's a good win for them. They kind of got back on track. You know, you're only allowing 14 points. We're going to get right into it. For me, this is a battle of two really bad defenses. I mean, really bad defenses. They give up 492 yards a game. Both of them do, by the way. They're like there's a 0.6 yard differential between two of these teams. They're just both bad. There's no way. Their pass defense is bad. They're both, I mean, Arkansas State ranks 10th in the conference with giving up 281 yards, while ULM ranks 8th with giving up 252 yards of total offense. It's just bad. Like, and Caleb Evans, and you have Lane Hatcher. You also have a guy by the name of Omar Bayless that might run wild this weekend. I mean, his holy smokes.
It's Omar Bayless. A Sunbelt defense this side of Boone is not going to do that well defending him. He says after Texas State, I think, held him to 77 yards. But that's still the point. He still put up 77 yards in a 38-14 win.
Mm-hmm.
The story of the game is going to be Lane Hatcher and Omar Bayless against this secondary. The story of the game for ULM is going to be Caleb Evans against this defense.
Depleted defense. I mean, all the injuries, and now you lose a guy that was just your defensive player of the year.
Weak, but yes.
Excuse me.
No. We're on the same page, though. Yeah. Those are the stories of the game. Those are going to be the things that define the game, but I think the matchups to watch are going to be how the rest of the offense comes together. Mm-hmm. Marcel Murray for Arkansas State is going to have to step up in this game.
He's going to.
Like, they're going to be focused on Omar Bayless, but Marcel Murray is going to have to step up. On the other side of the ball, Caleb Evans is going to be throwing the ball around, probably, against this depleted Arkansas State defense.
Mm-hmm.
If Troy could do it, I think Caleb Evans could do it with ULM. Mm-hmm. We've seen that. But Josh Johnson's going to have to step up because he was at one point the top 10 running backs in the country.
Uh-huh.
And we'll get more into that, but those are going to be the things to watch, because how does the run game progress? And I think I'm giving it away here, but I think the run game is going to end up being a big part of this, not just because the rest of the defense is so depleted, but because the rest of the offense is going to have to find a way to become to front it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm going through stats here. Just the thing that sticks out to me is third down conversions. That you keep your drives alive. That's what you want. That you want good third down conversions. Both of these two teams, ULM, middle of the pack, converting 37% of the time. This is offense. Arc State, right there at 7, they convert 35% of the time. So they're kind of both the same kind of bad, like at even third downs of keeping your offense on the field. And then when you go and you look at their third down basically defense, it's not too much better. Arkansas State, 6th, ULM, 10th, actually. ULM has the worst third down conversion rate for a defense, like their opponent conversion rate. Opponents are converting on third downs 46% of the time. 46% of the time.
That's a coin flip.
That's literally a coin flip, and that doesn't bode well for your defense when teams they can have long, sustained drives. And when they're converting on third downs, that's killing defenses, man. Like that takes a lot out of a defense. And when they're giving up 46% on third downs, that's not good. Arkansas State isn't too much better at 41%. So I really think this is going to be an offensive explosion of a game. Like I swear, I think it could be a 55-50 game just by looking at how bad these defenses are. And we haven't even really, I mean, we talked about Omar, we talked about Lane Hatcher, we talked about, you know, Caleb Evans, but we need to talk about total offense. These two teams, they light up the scoreboard when it comes, they light up the stat book when it comes to total offense. I mean, they're both averaging over 30 points a game and over 420 yards a game. These are good offenses that are about to play some really bad defenses. This is going to be a high scoring game.
No, and I agree, because that's why I'm saying the thing to watch is going to be which running offense picks up the pace. And if you're going to get, I'm going to go ahead and slip into this, because we were talking about the three things that either team has to do in order to win this game. I went ahead and looked at ULM for reasons, doesn't really matter. But the number one thing was, in each of their wins so far this season, 501 yards, 419 yards, 428 yards, and 429 yards. Now, I did include the Florida State game because I considered that a win. Like, it's close for them to come so close.
You just need to go to for two. That's all they had to do.
The point was, if you get to 400 yards, whichever team gets to 400 yards this weekend first is going to win the game.
Okay.
I it's a prop bet, but I'm circling it and putting it on that. Louisiana Monroe is going to have to run the ball. You were talking about terrible defenses. Arkansas State has given up 1,688 rush yards this entire year. That's 211 per game.
Yeah,
if Josh Johnson does not eat, ain't they going to go home hungry? Like 211 yards a game.
Well, that's rushing. That's the thing. They're both bad. I mean, Arkansas State gives up 211. ULM gives up 240. I mean, these are just bad defenses right here. And that's why I think and Arkansas State doesn't run the ball as much, which they haven't really had to, but when it's there, it's there. Like I think that's how it's going to be this weekend. I think that's what Blake Anderson's going to look at, and he's going to say, "Okay, there's massive holes right there. We got to run the ball. We got to sustain some drives here. Maybe it might turn into a thing of, okay, let's not score in three plays. How about we keep their defense or keep their offense off the field and just burn some clock here?" That it might come down to that, but I still think when you got a guy like Omar Bayless, ULM's not going to be able to contain him for very long. And Omar Bayless is just, I think he gets two touchdowns easy this game, and it's not going out on a limb, but I'm going to say he goes over 100 yards. I mean, it's just going to be really easy for these guys to move the ball.
And I have right here, it's really stupid, but it says, I wrote down, force the run. For ULM to win this, they're going to have to force Arkansas State to run. They're going to have to shut down Omar Bayless and Kirk Merritt, but you may as well be telling water, don't let that fish breathe. Like, it doesn't matter what they do, but even if they did, let's say they did shut down Omar Bayless and they did shut down Kirk Merritt, they're fighting an uphill battle still because Arkansas State is got 3.8 yards per rush. So you talk about sustaining drives, you give it to friggin' Marcel Murray every single play, you're picking up three in a cloud, four. Yeah. You're going to pick up first downs real easily with that.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a whole lot easier to manage than having 80-yard touchdown passes on you from Omar Bayless.
Yeah.
So if ULM wants to win this game, or if either team wants to win this game, they're just going to have to shut down that passing game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a gargantuan task.
Yeah.
But whatever defense steps up, whichever defense does better, whichever team scores the most points is going to win.
Is that how football works?
I mean, you know, I'm no expert.
Yeah.
But.
Well, you know, the one thing that I saw that was, I guess, a good thing for these two teams was that they're not bad at kicking field goals. You know, for Arkansas State, they actually have the best field goal kicking percentage in the conference right now, with a 91% field goal percentage. That is Blake Group. I think that's his name. G-R-U-P-E.
Group.
Blake, yeah, Blake Group.
I like it.
8 of 11. He's a sophomore, so he'll be there for a little bit. Good job. And then ULM kicker, Jared Porter, 4 of 6. So he hasn't had a whole lot of attempts at field goals. So that's really the only positive thing that I found. Other than their offenses are good, but their defenses are just going through the stat sheet and looking at how bad these defenses are. We're gonna be dead wrong. It's gonna be like a 7-6 game just because just something crazy. It's gonna be a hailstorm up there or something like that. But
that's why I'm saying is like these teams have got to shut down passes like in order for them to win. Mm-hmm. Like you just can't have 75 yard touchdowns like Troy gave up. Even if you have the offense to keep up like Troy did, Troy didn't win.
Yeah.
It could go the other way for any of these teams. Mm-hmm. Georgia State against Arkansas State. Georgia State picked it up. Yeah. They were throwing the ball. They shut down Omar Bayless, and they were able to beat the crap out of Arkansas State just because they did. Yeah. I don't think ULM's obviously not a Georgia State, but.
But before we get, we've got these three things that need to happen. The last thing, and this is going to roll right into my three things that I think need to happen. ULM is leading the conference though in turnovers, in forced turnovers. ULM, that was their thing, and they didn't do that. I think, but maybe one time. I think they picked off Zach Thomas one time in that game, but they didn't have any turnovers in that game. And this is a defense that relies heavily on getting turnovers. They have to get turnovers because this isn't a bend don't break defense. This is a if we don't get turnovers, we're kind of screwed. That's basically how this defense has turned into right now. And so that's going to be the interesting thing, and that's going to play into my first point is Lane Hatcher has to have less than two interceptions the entire game. If he has any more than two, it's going to be an ugly game. That's going to give ULM a really good chance at winning this ball game. But if he can limit the turnovers, That's going to be huge.
I think two is really specific, but I agree with you there. I absolutely agree.
He can give up one or two because I just think the offenses are going to be that explosive, but he's got to limit it, and that's the big thing. And this is an aggressive defense, and I think that's the other reason because they play so aggressive, they give up this amount of yards. My second point, Omar Bayless. It's worked for 7 games. There's no one outside of Boone, like we said, there is no secondary outside of Boone that's going to be able to really handle this guy for 4 quarters. I mean, Texas State did a really good job of that, held him to 77 yards, still had, what, 2 touchdowns, though, on 7 catches. I mean, outside of that, I don't see him having another bad game this year. And Lane Hatcher, the kid's he's slinging the rock all over the place, and he's going to sling it to him a lot. So Blake Anderson, I know he's got a game plan. Go to him. I mean, he's your best player on the field. Let him do his work. I really think he needs 2 touchdowns. I think he needs 150 yards in the game. I think he has to be a huge impact on this game, which I think he will, but he's got to come in the game and he's got to be a huge impact against this defense.
I think it's worth mentioning that we keep talking about Omar Bayless. I think Kirk Merritt and Jonathan Adams have to step up too.
They do.
Right now, they you put their yardage together, it's still not as much as Omar has. But 464 and 463, that's their totals of receiving yards, one and the other. Like, they're twins. They're two sides of the same coin. But
solid.
I mean, when you have Y and Z receivers who can pull down almost 500 yards.
That's solid.
It's solid. Even if they don't go to Omar Bayless, I think he needs to – he's Lane Hatcher, more than anything, needs to spread that ball around and get the rock out.
Mm-hmm. And then third point, I think it comes down to like what I was trying to say earlier is maybe the best defense in a game like this is your offense, and your offense kind of having these long sustained drives and not these quick hitters where it just turns into a fireworks type show. So maybe that might be the thing, and that comes with you. What you were saying is you got to establish a run game.
I'm gonna agree with you there because the other point that I have written down here is complete passes. Mm-hmm. I know I talked about get to 400 yards. I know I talked about the run game's got to happen. But if this is going to be a shootout, then the gunslinger's got to do some shooting. Caleb Evans, it doesn't matter if it's a 3-yard pass or if it's an 80-yard touchdown pass. Mm-hmm. Caleb Evans has got to make some passes happen.
Mm-hmm. He's got to make plays.
Right.
Yeah.
He is the star of the that offense. He is the guy that everything goes around for ULM. Mm-hmm. They don't have a star wideout like they did last year with Marcus Green, mm-mm, but he's got to make those plays just as much as anybody else on that team.
Well, that is our breakdown for this week's Know Your Enemy game of the week. Yes, we didn't have any guests this week, but you know, we wanted to change it up. You know, we've seen a lot of these teams. We've heard from a lot of these guys. We've kind of figured out what these teams are. We're at week 9 now, or week 10. So, I mean, we've kind of seen the playbook at this point for most of these teams. So, you know, we just decided, let's dive it into ourselves, and that's why we did it like this. So, as you've heard all of our stats, let's get into some bets.
Best bets.
That's right. It's best bets, and we're going to kick it right off with our Know Your Enemy game of the week. We obviously talked about a lot of bad offense. Or, excuse me, bad defense. A lot of bad defense.
Yeah, plenty of good offense.
Plenty of good offense. I think it's going to be a shootout, and I'm sorry. Blake Anderson, he's too good of a coach to lose this game. Nothing against Matt Viator. But I'm going to go Arkansas State. I think Lane Hatcher has a great game. I think Omar Bayless goes off. I think he gets over 150, and I think he gets 2 to 3 touchdowns. I don't think they're going to be able to stop him. He's just too big of an impact on this game. If ULM can get turnovers, they're going to stay in this ball game. But if they don't, you watch out. This could be – I mean, it's a 1.5-point spread right now. Yeah, 1.5 to Ark State's way. I think it'd get out of hand. I think Ark State could win this game by 2 touchdowns.
Oh, absolutely. When I was looking at this stuff, you have to realize that ULM is fighting an uphill battle. I said all these things because, yes, Josh Johnson's got to run the ball. Yes, Caleb Evans has got to complete passes. But you trying to tell me that ULM's going to stop Omar Bayless and Lane Hatcher and Jonathan Adams and Kirk Merritt and Marcel Murray? It's not going to happen.
you just keep going on there.
Right? Like Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, Julio Jones. The point is, I'm going with you, Arkansas State. It's ridiculous. Like there's if ULM wins this game somehow, I will come back and apologize first thing next week. So speaking of which, let's move on and talk about Troy at Coastal Carolina, a game that I will be doing a lot of apologizing for. Oh, I'm just not looking forward to it. It's Troy, Coastal, and oh my goodness, Coastal has a 61% chance of winning according to FPI. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really surprise me, honestly.
Yeah, Troy's coming in averaging 35. It's not bad. But last, they played a physical team in Georgia State. They only scored, what, 20, 28? Something like that, was it?
It was 30-something. 33? Like, yeah.
33-something. Yeah, it was 30.
52-33.
52-33. Coastal, I think, has a better defense than what Georgia State even has. I mean, you look at Coastal, they're only giving up 325 yards a game. That's not bad.
But my question is, do they have a good as offense as Georgia State does?
They probably not. They're only averaging 395. The over-under, and that's what I was trying to build to, the over-under is 61. That's, you know, what, 25 per team or something like that? Or 30
at least.
Per team.
30 per team. Yeah, 31-30 is what that says.
I think it's going to be right at that. I don't really foresee a lot of offense. I just think Troy's defense is so bad, and now they're playing another run defense. I don't have any faith in his defense, to be honest with you. I really don't. I think Coastal, they get the running game going. C.J. Marable, yeah, I was high on him early. I still love C.J. Marable. I think he has a really good game. Just seeing what Trey Barnett did, I think C.J. Marable could – I don't know if he eclipses 200, but I think C.J. Marable goes for $175, $180. I just think that is what Coastal's identity is, and I'm going to pick Coastal this week. I think Coastal gets the win.
I think that's a smart pick. It's getting very down to the wire for Troy. There are mm-hmm. – we say they still have plenty of season left, but – for Troy, there's not a lot of games left that you look like you can win. Mm-hmm. I think at some point, Troy's going to have to flip a switch and win it. If it doesn't happen, it's not going to happen. If it doesn't happen in this game, I'm not sure it's going to happen. Coastal Carolina is a much better team than they were last year. Coastal Carolina is a very good team comparatively this year in the Sun Belt. We talked about how all these teams are very There's a lot of parity between these teams. They're really, really sort of equal at that stage in the Sun Belt. But I disagree with you. I think that this, take the over on this. Troy, a team has scored, I think, 35 or more in every single game Troy has been in, pretty much. Coastal has more of an offense than South did or Campbell, and it's not. This is a much closer game than it was against either Georgia State or Missouri. So I really think that this is going to be another high-scoring game where Troy is forced to do something. And you know what? I think this is the week where they flip the switch. I know it's in Myrtle Beach, but it's Troy. They're in make or break mode right now. Mm-hmm. And if they don't make it, they're going to break it. I'm going to do a lot of apologizing about this, but I'm going to pick Troy this week.
That's fine. The one last thing I wanted to add, and I think it could very well be a thing where they kind of light up a scoreboard here, just because who knows? I mean, that could happen. It's Sun Belt. It's Fun Belt, baby. But the thing that just I'm looking at each schedule, and I know Coastal has the win over Kansas, but it's still Kansas. Neither of these teams have a statement, prove it, we belong here win this year.
No.
Troy has wins over Akron, South, and Campbell.
Yeah.
Coastal Carolina has wins over UMass, Norfolk State, and Kansas. And Kansas was a 12-7 it was a good win. But I'm sorry.
It's a first-year coach.
Les Miles still trying to figure out his team, all that. But, like, none of them have a prove-it win, like a prove-that-we-belong-here win at all. And so that's what makes this game really tough to pick, because you just don't know who's going to show up. And I think on the road, Troy, we saw they played on the road last week, and now they're going to go have to play on the road again this week against Coastal, and that's why I pick Coastal.
So. No, and, I mean, it's fair. What is – I know this spread, like – is 1 point.
Yeah.
But FPI has got it very much in Coastal's favor. Yeah. I don't think it would be smart to take my side on this, but it could go either way, and I think it's a lot closer than FPI says.
Okay.
Unfortunately, that is actually a bad thing for Troy.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go a little bit further west out to Louisiana. Texas State is going to take on the Cajuns in Cajun country, and I'm looking at that FPI graph. It's not very good.
94-5. 94.3 to 5.7. This is going to be a runaway game. I think we're really going to see Louisiana and just how physical of a difference of the tier two and bottom tier, because that's where Texas State is. When their defense played admirably against Arkansas State last week, I will give them that. But this is a different type of animal that you're going up against. Arkansas State is a finesse team. Louisiana is a 10-round, we're going to pound it at you with four different running backs.
Quarterback counts.
And the quarterback.
No, I'm including
Lewis,
the quarterback.
Yeah, Levi Lewis is going to do the same thing. This is just a different style of a team. And Louisiana, it's in
Lafayette.
They're 22.5-point favorite. I think they cover the 22.5.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just... They're averaging 286 on the ground.
That over-under right there, it says 55.5.
Yeah.
Take the over on this.
I think take the over, to be honest.
Louisiana might get...
Unless it's like a 45-10 game, that would be how you'd get close, I guess. But
Louisiana might get 55 on their own.
They might. I'm gonna go Louisiana for sure on this one. This is and I think this is another statement win for Louisiana, saying just how... I mean, They're there. They're right at tier two, 2A, 2B with Georgia State.
And we're going to go into the future for this next one. I think we're going to take two teams, a team from each of the past two games. We've got Louisiana going out to Myrtle Beach to take on Coastal Carolina. That's a game that's coming up. We're not going to be able to pick it because I think we might be recording that day.
Probably.
Is it a Wednesday game?
I'm
no, it's a Thursday game. Right, it's right there. Here. But the point is, it's another Thursday game.
Oh, yeah.
Coastal is hosting Louisiana. See, this is a little bit weirder because Coastal's just a little bit better than Texas State. I just don't see a different outcome.
Yeah, I mean, the FBI right now giving Coastal a lot better chance than Texas State does. I mean, they're still a 24% chance of winning.
Yeah, put it this way, Coastal's in the double digits.
Yeah, that's so good. And 24 is actually real close. Real close.
Yeah. To upset if that goes up just 6.6%
of a point, and they've got it. The thing is, Coastal, they have a decent defense. I mean, their pass yards, they're giving up 140 yards passing. I mean, they played an App State team already. But
what does that matter against Louisiana?
That's what I was trying to say. It's like their strength isn't the right strength when you go up against a team like Louisiana. And I still think Louisiana, just the run game is just, it's too good. I just think they run over them, to be honest with you. The spread obviously hasn't come out yet, but I'm going to pick Louisiana in this one too.
That's the same. I'm Louisiana all the way. I think we picked Louisiana in all four possible spots. Mm-hmm. They're just that good. And last year they were a surprise. This year they're no surprise. Mm-hmm. They're the monster they were expected to be. Mm-hmm. Let's step outside and talk about monsters that we expected to be. Houston at UCF this weekend.
I thought you were about to say FCS. I was like,
I almost did.
Why did we pick this game?
But, you know, at the beginning of the season, this looked like a prime time big deal matchup. This is literally the same line as, may as well be the same line as Louisiana, Texas State. UCF has it pretty much 91% over Houston. Houston's just not the same.
They aren't. I mean, they had a really good game against SMU last week. 34-31 game.
I was concerned they might have pulled off the upset.
A lot of App State fans were watching that game. Mm-hmm. I think it was a Thursday night game.
It was.
They played really well. Problem is like they kind of the same way where they don't have a prove it win. I mean, they've beaten North Texas, they've beaten UConn in their last five games, but then they've lost to Tulane by a touchdown. They lost by 15 to Cincinnati, and then they lost a close game to SMU. They don't have a we belong here type win.
North Texas is their best win. That's pretty.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a good win, but
and North Texas isn't as good.
That's also year. And it's also early in the year. They had Derek King at the time.
Yeah, I think that was right before Derek King went out. I mean, North Texas is a 3-5 team. They're not a good team this year. So they don't have that we belong win yet. And we're 10 weeks into the year yet. I mean, you've had to have played somebody by now to show we belong here, and that's just not here. And UCF, holy smokes, they're averaging 46 a game. I mean, I'm looking at stats, 560 yards a game.
They lost more games this year than they have in the previous, like, three, I think.
Like two or
but
3 years.
The point is, UCF is still a darn good football team.
They just blew out a really good Temple team, a Temple team that beat Memphis, a Temple team that beat a Maryland team out of the Big Ten. They just blew them out 63-21. It wasn't close.
Pitt got revenge for last year, mm-hmm. and Cincinnati is a better team. Mm-hmm. That's their losses. That's how you explain them mm-hmm. right then and there. Yep. UCF over Houston, that's what I got.
Yeah, UCF for sure in this game. So
now let's head out west. We got a midnight game. Ooh. We have a midnight
Midnight Madness.
Midnight Mountain West Madness. Couple of M's in there. I'm just going,
M&M.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Like a certain candy. So basically, Fresno State and Hawaii. Hawaii is not what we thought they were. They're not as good as they were at the beginning of the season. But Fresno State is pretty darn good. It's midnight Eastern, okay?
Okay.
He's
okay.
Pointing at it. It says 10:59 Central Time. It's starting at midnight Eastern.
It counts.
All right. So
Hawaii and Fresno State. Hawaii. I love Hawaii. They're a fun team to watch. You talk about not being afraid to just sling it all over the place. Cole McDonald does exactly that. He has 313 passing attempts this season. That's Washington State numbers with Mike Leach. I mean, that's incredible. He's got 2,500 yards passing. He just throws it all over the place. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, they're averaging 488 yards a game, 354 through the air. So they like to throw the rock. And
I got to apologize real quick to the Rainbow Warrior faithful because I got things backwards. Hawaii is the good team. Fresno State is the team that is not what I thought they were. They're not. I didn't realize they were 3-4, but mm-hmm. you know, I mean, they still got.
They have a decent defense.
Yeah,
we talked about Fresno State early in the year. Obviously, they've played some better teams. They're 2-3 over the last five games, but
They barely beat Sacramento State.
I'm looking. It's, again, you know, you got wins over UNLV, New Mexico State, who is winless, and Sac State. Like, that's your three wins. What have I been saying this whole – give me a prove-it win. Give me a – you belong here win.
Hawaii has one.
Hawaii does have one.
Beat a Pac-12 team, didn't they? It was Arizona.
Yeah, they did beat Arizona State, I want to say, earlier in the year.
It was Arizona. It was the blue and
– Oh, yeah, it was Arizona State. Yeah, and they beat Oregon State. They've got two wins. And then they played Washington and didn't do so well. But it's okay. They have two we belong here wins. Hawaii, no doubt.
You know what?
It's in Hawaii.
You know what?
You going to change it just so we have something different?
See, yeah, because I wrote down Fresno State when we went to this game. And
stick with it.
You know what? You're right. I'm going to be a man of my word. Fresno all
the
way.
Love it.
Got to have some differentiation in there. And also, if Troy picks up the win at Coastal somehow, then I got to have a win somehow myself. So definitely looking a little bit better for you than for me. But you know what? Whatever.
We'll see.
We'll see.
So, but yeah, that'll do it for Best Bets. If you're listening to this tomorrow, Thursday morning, huge game tonight. Go watch it. It's on ESPNU.
We've already made our picks in that game.
We both picked App. This is a huge, huge game for App. Talked about it earlier. They have to run the table. They have a huge game coming up against South Carolina that I think a lot of people. I mean, they're going to be. I don't know if they'll be the favorite in that game, but obviously they're going to be the better ranked team. I'm already looking at FPI for that game. It's 63-37 favor South Carolina. It's going to be at South Carolina, but this is a big game. They need to win this game by 21 points or more.
I agree.
It has to be. They have to look in control. This is, you are on national television. There's only two other games on the entire night tomorrow night. You've got to impress a lot of people tonight because Sunbelt teams just don't have many chances to impress people. Nope. So they have got to win this game tomorrow night.
This is honestly the Sunbelt's best shot at getting somebody into
a New Year's Day. Yeah, New Year's Day Six Bowl. Yeah, yes. No, it just because of how everything else is lined up nationally. I know there's a big game day's there, Memphis, SMU this week. Huge game there. We'll see what happens. I know a lot of App State fans will be watching that, but tomorrow night, Thursday night, if you're listening to us on Thursday, if you haven't already, if you're listening to us after, hopefully we're right about this game.
But this is right now, you know what? We cover the Sun Belt. It's the only game that matters.
It's the only game that matters. So that'll do it for Best Bets. But now we've got, there was some big news this week.
That covers
everything. High school athletes, middle school athletes. It affects a lot of athletes. So let's get into it with our final word.
Final word.
Yep, it's final word. And you and me literally have been talking about this for probably 30 minutes. We could spend an entire show on it.
Yeah, just off the mic, just going back and forth on it.
Because it seems like, and this is my deal. We talk about it, and it seems like as we're talking about it, we find new problems. We find new points of view of what could happen, what's going to happen. And that right there is what my whole point is of this, is I think that's why the NCAA didn't want it, didn't basically play their cards, because they thought, okay, if we just say no to everything, that's a lot easier than having to deal with all these problems. Because the real question is, and what we're talking about right now, is the NCAA basically came out and said players are allowed to make money off of their image and likeness. We don't know how soon it is. They haven't set a date, but they were basically there. They
thought it was 2022.
Oh, was that 2023?
It was 4 years, 2023 maybe.
Okay.
The point was 4 years from now, it would take effect.
Okay.
So high school kids right now that are looking at into college would be part of the effect.
Okay. Well, and you and me talking here, like we both agreed, yes, we think players should be paid.
Right. This is a great way for players to make money on the side as opposed to just making their scholarships. And it's a way for them to get a chunk of the change, mm-hmm. because this is a $1 billion organization. College football
easily
makes so much money for these universities and these players. Yeah, they get an education. Yeah, that's really expensive, but they're not making any money off the fact of who they are. Tua Tagovailoa, if he was in a Nike commercial, he should get paid for that, just like anybody else in a Nike commercial. There's a girl, and what's her name? Toni Harris, the kicker. I've talked about this with people before. She's a kicker for an NAIA school. She was in a Nike commercial. That stuff isn't regulated at that level, but she made money for being in that Nike commercial. And why couldn't someone like Tua Tagovailoa, I know he's not a Sun Belt player, but why couldn't a player of that stature be making money for it too? Mm-hmm. These players deserve to make money off of themselves at the very least.
And so that's exactly what Mark Emmert said, and I'm quoting an ESPN article here. He says he expects member schools, they'll quickly agree that college athletes should be able to profit from the activities that aren't directly related to activities unconnected to being an athlete. But the devil is in the details when it comes to deciding what type of change will come when allowing things like sponsorship deals that are directly related to a student's popularity for being that said athlete. Ramoji Huma, the founder of National College Players Association, said he viewed Tuesday's announcement as a failure that doesn't go far enough to show the organization is truly interested in supporting athletes. He quotes saying, "The NCAA has failed on this issue once again, that this is another attempt at stalling on the issue." So there's people that still believe that it's still not, it was like words.
It's not enough.
Yeah.
It's not enough. And that's something that we didn't necessarily come to that conclusion, but the more we talked about it, the more things popped up that we thought, well, did they consider this? Did they consider this? We talked about the UCF kicker who is on YouTube. Obviously, the first thing that comes to anybody's mind is the NCAA college football games from EA Sports. These other different little things. We talked about how little dealerships would get probably Sun Belt players to show up. Local. I can imagine Jonesboro Chevrolet, Lane Hatcher here saying you can get the best deals here. Get some money for that.
Yeah, and there's been it's been a pretty talked about topic. I mean, we've had senators, congressmen that have said some kind of crazy things. U.S. Congressman Mark Walker, he's a Republican out of North Carolina, proposed a bill to change the federal tax code in a way that would likely force the NCAA to give all student athletes the right to sell their names, images, and likeness. The current proposal would create an unrestricted market for college athletes to seek endorsement deals. Walker said earlier this month that he hoped to bring his bill to a vote in early 2020, which could mean it could go into effect in January of 2021.
And we're not here to get political. The whole point of this is that's an oversight.
Yeah.
That is a severe oversight for a law like that to pop up after this ruling.
Yep.
And I think I have to agree with, what was his name? The guy who commented on it. Basically, it feels like the NCAA is kicking the can down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it again?
Ramoji Huma.
Ramoji Huma.
Yes.
Okay.
The founder of the National College Players. So they were definitely, their hand was forced. The NCAA's hand was forced by the bills that were enacted in California. New York did it. Georgia even talked about, I mean, when you start getting the states in the Southeast, I think that's when the ball really starts rolling. Is when you get states like Florida, when you get states like Texas that are in Georgia that have
big recruiting bases.
I mean, huge levels of athletes, not even just in football, because that's the other thing that we haven't even touched the surface on.
We talked about football.
Everyone's talking about football and these players getting deals. Guess what? There's like 12 other sanctioned sports at most time.
Track and field, beach volleyball, regular volleyball, golf.
So, but if the rule, now the NCAA said that their rule won't follow the same rules as the California rule, which is kind of like an unrestricted free market type deal. They're going to have a lot more, and they're going to have to do this. And I mean, they aren't going to figure this out overnight. Like, and I know they've had years to figure it out and think of some way to do it, but there's going to be amendments to this whole thing. Like, there's going to be bylaws, but still somebody's going to find a loophole. Like, there's going to be some way to get around all of this. And that's what the NCAA was trying to avoid, was just saying, nope, nobody gets it. And to a point, I understand it, but these kids are working their tails off, man. Like, you are the governing body. Your job is to figure out how to make their lives better, correct? Like, that's your responsibility is the athletes that are making billions of dollars for yourself. So you guys have had plenty of time to figure this out. You and me aren't going to figure this out in 30-minute span, because it's just not going to happen. So I love that there's actually a step that's been made. I wish that it was actually a more genuine step. I think they took it because they were forced to. I don't think it was because, oh, we've had this coming to Jesus moment and now we're accepting it. It was because they were forced to do it.
I agree. I think the NCAA should put a little bit more thought and probably a little bit more effort into the ruling. They could have at least I don't know, put it off and said, we will address this, or we've got a committee doing this. There are a whole lot of different things they could have addressed, they could have taken care of, they could have thought about. But the point of it, I think the end of the day, the point of it is, the NCAA didn't do as much as we thought they could have.
No. It will take place in 2021. I just
oh, it's 21? That up.
Yeah, 2021. Okay. So the board, it said the board My wants bad. Each division to implement the new rules in January of 2021. The interesting thing about that is there's a lot of conferences that have contract negotiations in 2023 with the NCAA. So
I think that's where I got that then.
Yeah. That's the whole there's rumors, there's talks of that. Maybe the power conferences just want to create their own whole division. So
we will talk about that.
It's a whole new thing. So
later. As for right now, I'm Thomas Gleaton.
And I'm Colin Cale. And that is the final word. And we are the Bench Boys Podcast. Thank you for listening. It's been a fun episode, kind of different than what we've done in the over the yep. past couple of weeks.
Yeah, we had to shake it up a bit, keep it fresh.
We did.
If you like these takes, you can follow us at the OG Bench Boys. He's at Colin Cahill. I'm at Thomas Gleaton. We're on Twitter. If you like this, enough, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Whether it's iTunes, iHeartMedia, Spotify, Google Play, whatever, Anchor, just go ahead and hit it so that you can get their latest updates from us. Follow us on Twitter again. Thank you for listening. You got anything else this week?
If you're listening to us on Thursday, have a happy Halloween.
That's
if
right.
you're listening to us on Friday, I hope you didn't eat too much candy.
Give one kid an extra little candy bar for me.
Yes. And if you're Just listening to this on Saturday, there's a lot of good things that you can talk about around the tailgate. And back to if you're listening to this on Thursday, cool little story I saw here. I know we're like way over. But these for trick-or-treaters, if you do have trick-or-treaters come to your house...
Yeah.
And they are holding a blue, an all blue,
the teal pumpkin,
like pumpkin.
Yeah, or the bucket. Yeah,
they're normally a, I don't want to say autistic, but they're on the spectrum basically.
Yeah.
And so just be approachable and watch out for those because those kids sometimes they don't do well with interactions with people. So just be really really prevalent when you see a kid like that tomorrow night, or if you saw a kid like that. Last night, when you're listening to this, that's what that was for. If you're wondering why they were carrying a blue pumpkin, so but no, with that,
be like the trick or treaters every year,
yeah, and go to the dentist because
that's not where I was going. This, I was trying to set you up for it.
Oh,
be like the trick or treaters every year and
go to the dentist and come on back.
There it is.